Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The horn.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champ.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a selfless big place of fun.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
Yes. I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let the guys play against. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. And folks, I've got a special guest for you this week. Tom, take it away.
Hey guys, man, how's it going? Appreciate y'all listening tonight. Sorry I was not able to join you for the last show. I am sure y'all were as sick as I was at the opening drive of that football game. Dave, talk about that, man. How did you think starting off when they were able to, you know, put 15 plays together and control the ball for 8 minutes and just kind of do whatever they wanted to do?
Yeah, it was frustrating at levels, right? You know, they certainly drive down the field. You never want a team to be able to do that. They score a touchdown, and you never want your opponent to do that. But like the football nerd within me was like you said, you know, 15 plays, was adding up the plays, and there reached a point where I said, damn it, if they're going to score, just let them score. They don't need to put so much sort of tread or so much use on the defense so early in the game. And we talk about there's been multiple games where there's been, you know, 86, 88, 85 snaps. And so here we go giving away 15 right off the bat. My initial concern was more about the usage on the defense than it was the actual scoring. How crazy is that?
No, that's true, man. And, you know, they always talk about the scripted plays, right? The plays that they work on going into, you know, prep week for that next opponent. And so I was trying to be positive after the score. And I was like, okay, well, they've gotten their scripted plays out of the way. And yes. I like how Saban put it to the announcer at halftime when he just said, we just had to get something worked out. We just had to make some adjustments. You know how he always likes to say, we just had to make some adjustments. And yes. So I do find it interesting that, you know, at that opening drive, they've got their, you know, true freshman tailback in the game because, you know, unfortunately their starter, you know, neck injury, you know, no longer playing football. Their backup tailback is out. Now this guy's coming in. He starts against Alabama. And, you know, on the first drive, he's got 24 yards on the first drive. And so it is interesting to me when you go back and look at the stat line. I was surprised after the game that it was only 27 yards when he had 24 yards on that opening drive.
On the opening drive. You know, one of the things, and you're right, Saban was, you know, he did mention adjustments. He talked about they were running out of formations that we were expecting them to pass from, you know, based on practice. And that's, you know, that's going to be clever, you know, Jimbo Fisher showing one thing and in this game, especially doing another. And of course I love after they make those adjustments, you know, Saban made the comment that there was a little bit of miscommunication on the adjustments as we were making them. And so that contributed. But I like, you know, Terrell Lewis. I don't know if you heard his post-game quote, but he colorfully summed it up that, you know, the defense got together and decided they needed to nut up. So, you know, elevate their play so that they could take on Texas A&M the rest of the game. I thought that summed it up pretty nicely there.
No, absolutely, man. I heard that as well. That's one way to put it, man. I like that. Well, tell me about obviously the middle of the game kind of went nicely for us. Let's start with offense. What would you like to say? I mean, you did a good job talking about, you know, the Tua show and the wide receivers last week. We could talk about these guys every week, What jumped out at you on offense that you want to kind of start with?
Yeah, I think sort of the theme that this team and I think it really manifests Saturday against A&M. This team is, my sort of working theory, this team is the solitaire team, right? And so you have the deck of 52 cards, everything's in there. You're going to win or lose based on how the cards really, play out. And so this game proved that Alabama has everything in its deck. It's got, the offensive line came together. The running game came together. The passing game obviously has come together. There's things we'll talk about on defense with the pass rush and the secondary. And so all of the bits and pieces and parts and components came together and are at least manifest. And so some we saw this game, some we've seen in previous games, but now we've seen them all. And now we just need to put them all together in a single game. And so what I saw on offense were some of the missing parts. The offensive line came together, and I know we want to talk about, and I specifically want to get your perspective on the movement of Landon Dickerson to center. But I thought the offensive line came together, played more physical, and then the running game, and it's a hand in glove, right? They both needed to improve individually, but then together, there's a multiplier effect. And so I thought Najee – Brian too, but Najee probably had his best performance as an Alabama running back, certainly had a high water mark yardage wise for the season. And then he also had his single 25 yard rush, which was his longest on the season. And so I thought it was good to see that piece of the game, that component of the offense really come together. There's other things, but that's what stood out to me the most.
Yeah, I want to latch on what you were saying about the offensive line, because obviously, we had talked before about, once we had a sighting of number 65, what it was going to mean to the shuffling. And so obviously there was discussion about Owens and, him being banged up for this game. Obviously there's been 2 weeks, right? We've had a bye week. They've had 2 weeks now for him coming back right after the bye, right after him coming back on a bye week after the suspension of four games, or being able to work his way back a little bit in that game and then having the bye week and now Texas A&M, yeah, was perfect for Deonte Brown, for his opportunity, yes, to be able to get back on the field. And
you
and
couldn't
so
have written it better.
You couldn't have, because he got to get a few reps, as you talked about, like when was he going to come into that first game for him? But what we saw from Landon Dickerson and Deonte Brown and Evan Neal, I think that's your starting line for the rest of the season, barring injury. You've talked on the show about Dickerson and what a physical presence this guy is. And obviously whenever we did our preseason show, we talked about the fact that he can play both guard positions and center. Well, he's a graduate transfer, right? He's already graduated. Obviously, the guy's smart. Obviously, the guy's got a physical presence. It didn't look to me like him and Brown missed a beat. It actually looked to me like it almost looked to me like they were just picking up where they've left off in practice. And so, like, obviously, you and I aren't getting a chance to watch practice, but I'd be curious how much of that combination was running with the ones from the beginning of August until the season started, because it almost just looked too seamless. There was no missed assignments. There was no missed communication. I mean, there was plays where they were pulling Landon Dickerson and Deonte Brown together around the right end for Najee, and together around the left end together. And they just didn't miss a beat.
No, it looked like they had played side by side for, a couple of seasons, and we know that's not true. And so it does point to the idea of, did they get reps in fall camp, when the media wasn't watching? And I'm going to bet yes, partly because Saban's going to mix up players in a lot of different positions, kind of see what he's got. And then if he finds something he likes, he's going to practice it. And so, yeah, I would imagine we've seen some of, that they've practiced side by side a lot. I kind of hate it for Casher because he's going to get wildly pipped in this, but your prediction early on was he was the one that would get moved out Now, I hate that injury is causing that, but it certainly opens up the door. I probably originally thought that Evan would lose his position simply because he's a freshman. But he's proven that you can't take him off the field, and he's huge as well. And so, you know, what you said about the center and the two guards, that's a beef package right there. That's just a lot of, you know, big bodies. And then I like, you know, Gary Danielson, one of the points that he made is that when you put Landon at the center position, he more easily can influence blocking in both directions. You know, when he's at right guard, sure, he can pull, but that's more of an effort. When he's at center, it's just reaching one way versus reaching the other, and he can influence the run game in both directions. I thought that was an astute observation. And then again, you were right all along that Landon would move down to center when Deontay came back. And I think this is the line that we probably would have drawn up, you know, entering the season.
Well, there's no knock on, you know, Chris Owens in this, right? Landon Dickerson just comes from, I mean, he's a transfer from Florida State. It's a big football program. He's a graduate transfer, right? And so this guy's got a lot of football under his belt. And so Chris's time will come. But right this second, when you talked about the physicality and just the presence of Landon Dickerson, there was a couple times where I saw him go in combo with Deontay on his guy and then go up to the second level to get his linebacker, or combo with Evan and go up and get the linebacker. So to your point, if you are comboing with a guy who is 6'7", 360, or you're comboing with Deontay Brown and his physical presence in the run game, oh my gosh. I mean, what a mismatch. And so, you know, this is another time that Coach Saban has just brought in the right piece of the cog just out of thin air, man. I mean, how many times in pre-Saban would we have a transfer come in? It would be all the rage, you know, this guy's going to be this and this guy's going to be that. Well, for the most part, when Saban brings in somebody, they fill a hole. And we've talked about the consistency that we've had at center at this university for several years now. And we've talked about the players that have been asked to shift from left tackle to center and, you know, keep this thing rolling forward. Well, right this second, from what I saw, and I know it's one game, but Texas A&M has a pretty good physical defensive line and they're good against the run. Landon Dickerson's looking like a pretty important cog right this second.
Yeah. Well, you know, and he has played every game, and this was his second game at center. He started when Chris was
right.
Had a concussion earlier in the season against New Mexico State. And so, but your point is right on. It's easy to see. He bubbles up to the top very quickly in his performance. And, you know, and you're right. He's a guy, you know, you think about, you know, we've always talked about Saban going to get his guy and have a high hit rate, not 100%, but it's been high on JUCOs. And now with the transfer portal, that just gives him another opportunity. That just gives him another conduit, you know, to get a player. And certainly Landon. Now I'll say this about Chris Owens and others. Tommy, this may be, and I don't have a roster in front of me, but this may be one of the deepest offensive lines we've ever seen either. When you factor in, you know, the five that we're talking about, you factor in Chris Owens, what is it, Emil Ekior, Dallin Court, we're hearing great things about him.
Got Lashley.
Matt Womack. You get 8 or 9, almost 10 deep before you even, you know, question, is that guy worthy or am I just filling in a name? You look at some of the folks that we've had across the offensive line, I don't think they would crack, and I mean starters on championship teams, I don't know that they would crack the top 8 or 9 of this group. And you can even say that with the players that are there. Matt Womack, he's a national champion, starter at right tackle. And with the group that's ahead of him, and I know he's been a little dinged up, But with the group that's ahead of him, he can't find the field, and he's a national champion, you know, at a starting tackle position.
And he's 6'7", 335, and he can't find the field. Right? How many football programs would he find the field at 6'7", 335? And I will tell you
and that's not a knock on him. That's what we want to be clear on that, right?
No, that's what happens when, you know, these players say when they get to Saturday, they've been going against better players in practice than they see in the game. And for Evan Neal was very fortunate that we opened with Duke. Take nothing away from Duke. But in years past, we've had a game that has ended up being a tougher component in week one. Evan Neal has had the benefit of a schedule, which not only has Evan Neal had this, but so has Shane Lee and Christian Harris, and we'll get to that on the other side of the ball.
Sure.
But these true freshmen it's really been very beneficial that the schedule has afforded them the luxury of becoming that sophomore football player halfway through the season, because we don't have time till the end of the season for them to become a sophomore.
I agree with that. And Evan Neal, even more so, I think, than some of the other guys, you forget that he's a freshman. I mean, you know, first of all, just look at his stature. You're not going to believe that he's a freshman. But he's the one that's easy. You kind of forget who the linemen are sometimes anyways. And so he's the one that's easy to forget that he's still a true freshman. We see things from the other guys that still remind us. We don't see them from Evan.
No, absolutely. Well, hey, man, I want to talk about the receivers for a second, just because I like that Gary Danielson was calling them the four amigos, because I just want to give Jalen Waddle a little love here, because obviously we've talked about the talent, which this kid is. And this kid, he's one of these lunch pail guys that just goes to work. And so he's 5'10", and he's 182. So he's not that prototypical 6'4", 220 guy that's your first-round draft pick. But that kid was, you know, hometown kid, right, out of Houston, Texas, playing against a lot of guys he knows. And these Texas schools are kicking themselves that they didn't get this kid. And you and I talk all the time in years past, more so than now, because Saban plays so many people. But remember how we would talk about a talented player would shy away from competition and they would just go to the easy school because they knew that, you know, it was easy? Well, to Jalen Waddle's credit, dude came right after Tua saved Alabama's ass and showed the world who Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, and Devonta Smith was. Because we weren't using them their freshman year, let's be fair. And so Tua showed the world who they were. And Jalen Waddle still came and said, okay, I got my lunch pail, I'm ready to work. And he's like, there's room for me too, because I'm that freaking good. And I'm glad that Devonta did what he did, and I'm glad Ruggs did what he did. And poor Jerry Jeudy, you know, he was just the number one receiver in the nation last year, and he's probably the forgotten one right this second. But I'm just glad for Jalen that Jalen got to have his game of the season, you know, in this ball game.
Yeah, I am too, and especially in Texas. And again, I think the recruiting battle came down to Alabama and Texas A&M, and so he, you know, all the week before, it was a lot of interviews and conversation about it, and you know, he talked about how he was very familiar with Kyle Field, and he was very familiar with the Aggie program. And so there had to have been a little extra juice in him wanting to perform, and just his performance and just his standout, you know, watching the game Saturday and when he catches that pass for the first Alabama score and, you know, makes a nice couple of moves to get into the end zone, but he just hits the jets and just takes off. And it, even just looking at it, my wife says, man, he's fast. And so there's almost like when, you know, it's almost like a litmus test. Like we see it, but it's like when maybe someone who doesn't watch as much, you know, when they like instantly their eyes go to and lock on, like he's different, then that's telling, right? And so when my wife said, when my wife said, "Wow, he was fast." I was like, "Yeah, he is," and that's what Jalen Waddle's all about. So that was fun to see.
Well, and that's so demoralizing for Texas A&M. That was a 3rd and 7, okay, and he basically completes the pass. I mean, Tua gets credit for a 31-yard touchdown pass, but it was behind the line of scrimmage on 3rd and 7. I mean, that's just so demoralizing for a team.
Well, you know, when's the expose going to come out that talks about all these fraudulent yards for Tua, right? Because he'll throw behind the line of scrimmage, or, you know, the 70 yards to Ruggs was virtually a handoff, or he'll throw a 6-yard pass and it'll go for, you know, a touchdown. And so, you know, you could sort of, you know, tongue in cheek have an article about, you know, Tua's fraudulent yardage.
No, absolutely. Well, tell me something else that you wanted to kind of touch on. I got something else I want to do after you mentioned. What else would you like to talk about on the offensive side of the ball?
Well, you know, when Judy and Tua got into a little bit, I like the competitive spirit there. I don't think there's a whole lot to read into that. It did remind me, and I'm sure others, of Barrett and AJ getting into it. Obviously there was not the physicality there, but I like the competitive spirit and, you know, guys on the field competing at a high level. You know, they both saw something. It was a little bit different. I don't think there's tension. I don't think that's representative of anything negative other than just two competitive guys on the field. And I don't mind seeing it. I like
this. No, there was a missed touchdown there, right? I mean, it looked, I agree with you. It looked like Judy missed the read there. And Tua obviously felt strong about that. And, you know, he seems to be a perfectionist, right? And he wanted to get that pass complete. I will tell you, you know, as good as his stats was, you know, this was one of his lower quarterback ratings on the season, which is just so interesting. Is you and I used to talk about if an Alabama quarterback could be 20 of 30 for 200 yards and a touchdown. Well, he was 21 of 34 for 293. And so here he is, he throws 300 yards, but, you know, this is probably his worst completion percentage of the, you know, of his career as a starting quarterback at Alabama.
That's a pretty productive bad day.
Yes,
right?
21 of 34 for 300 yards and 4 touchdowns, but it gets you a quarterback rating of 85. And so we'd have to go back and look at the other games see what the other ratings were, but obviously 85 is probably his lowest test score of his Alabama career. And he broke the, you know, career touchdown record in the process of getting his 85 test score.
That's right. I wish I could be so productive on my bad days.
I want to talk about Brian Robinson because I do think when he had his opportunities, it is interesting that Najee got 20 carries and Brian got 10. Because remember back in the day with the two-headed monster, we'd want the starter to get 20 and we'd want the backup to get 10 touches. And if we didn't have that distribution, we weren't running the ball enough. So I did love the fact that happened. And I don't think that was on accident that one got 20 and one got 10. I know sometimes give or take a few carries there, you know, it's just the flow of the game. But I think that was very telling that, you know, they got that distribution kind of deal. But I want to give Brian kudos on his touchdown when he broke the plane of the goal that he had the presence of mind to say, I'm on top of this defender and I am able to, you know, reach out there and extend the ball. And so just having that football IQ on that play, just wanted to touch on that real quick.
No, I thought that was good. And I don't know how much, you know, of this is intentional or me reading too much in, or he was just, you know, sort of teetering off of the guy falling a little bit, but he stuck it out, crossed the plane and pulled it back. And so whether I'm reading too much into it, I don't know, but there's a little bit of, I'm not going to stick the ball out there and then, you know, jeopardize the ball. I'm going to stick it out there, pull it back to help protect the ball. And he was sort of teetering over. So I'm probably projecting too much, but stuff like that. You're right. I like the presence of mind, both to go for it, but then also to think about ball protection as well.
Hey, a couple more very quick things on Najee Harris's touchdown. By the same token, you know, we've watched a lot of great running backs in the past, but his ability to put his hand down when he's about to, you know, his knee's about to touch, and then him to see these three Texas A&M defenders come and be able to just, you know, dive into the end zone because he knows if he just takes their contact, he'll be able to get a touchdown. And then he has the presence when he hits the ground to roll properly so he doesn't, like, separate a shoulder or something. Just that couple little sequence of hand down, dive, roll, et cetera. I just thought that was neat too.
No, it really is. And we've been picking on him a little bit, and there's a lot, and it's, you call it nitpicking if you want. We've been picking on him a little bit. There's a lot to like about this guy. And even some of the things over the last couple of weeks that, you know, the South Carolina game where I you know, conjectured that he might lose his start to lose his job. He has been a different player since then. And some of the concerns that we've talked about, I see him improving upon every one of those. So, yeah, absolutely. Even there, to your point, is vision, right? And so to me, he hasn't been, maybe that's been his weakness, is he hasn't had, you know, vision of a Mark Ingram. And I'm not suggesting that he does today, but maybe that's a hint of improvement in that area. And if he continues to improve at that type of trajectory, then the running game is going to be where we need to be. And oh, by the way, it's getting there, right?
No, absolutely. Well, talk to me real quick for the listeners about, we had another sighting of number 85 in the jumbo package. We already talked about all the beef that we had in this game, you know, with the line as we were putting out there. But bringing in number 85 again, I think we're going to see some more of this three tight end look with number 85 before the season's over.
Absolutely. Yeah. Kendall Randolph is definitely becoming a staple in, you know, certainly short yardage situations. I think he's got a nice sort of role carved out for him. You know, we have seen, and here's sort of, you know, I'll take your opinion on this. We've seen Alabama bring in a sixth lineman, you know, every once in a while. We've also seen Alabama, was it Brandon Green, was a former offensive lineman that we officially moved to a tight end position. And so I get the feeling that because of the number change, that might be an indication truly of a position change for subsequent seasons. So do we see him? I've seen him go out, you know, to block and then run out on a route. Do we see him get the ball?
I think we do see him get the ball before the season's over. I think there's going to be that moment that Saban wants to take a crack at that. I do.
I was just going to say, watch, you know, there's probably a third and four, right? It's not going to be a long pass, but there's probably a third and four. Where he steps out the block and then peels out or something like that. I think there's sort of a critical, you know, sort of key third down when we're looking to just mix it up a little bit. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's not given an opportunity.
No, I agree with that. Well, tell me what else you got on offense before we do mini game balls. Cause obviously we could build a whole show talking about Tua's game again, cause it's like ho-hum. I will touch on what you said in the last show, you know, just reiterate what you said that, as much as I want to say that he's coming back and as much as I say that I hope he does, you know, more than likely he's not. And more than likely some of these wide receivers, some of these junior, we'll say at least two of these three, you know, we might get lucky and one might come back. But just to reiterate what you said before, the listeners just really need to enjoy probably the best quarterback to have ever played at Alabama and probably to ever play at Alabama again. And they need to enjoy these last few football games.
Completely agree with that. And what you said was completely sort of unplanned, but I'll take the window to do a shameless plug. If you have not participated in the listener support campaign, sort of topically, unintentionally, Tommy just referenced two bonus shows that we've recorded. And one speaks to the future of the quarterback position. And the other, I can't remember what you just said, really.
But talking about Tua and enjoying Tua while he's here.
Yeah, enjoying Tua, you know, talking about the quarterback situation. But at any rate, there's five or six shows that we've four or five shows that we've recorded, bonus shows that are out there available for listen only for members or contributors at the for the listener support campaign. And so there's definitely a good probably, you know, 15, 20 minute show talking about the future of the quarterback position that speaks to Tua and other folks as well. So I would definitely definitely encourage people to go contribute, get a listen to those and jump into that conversation. But again, that was sort of a shameless plug, but I agree. We've got to enjoy Tua.
Just his quick release, he goes through four progressions in just a few seconds and just, oh my gosh, just his ability to just read the play to start, know where to go with the ball, go through his progressions, lead the receiver, put the ball more, you know, 9 times out of 10, right where it needs to be, not where the receiver is, but where the receiver's going. You know, Gary Danielson spent all this time talking about yards after catch. Yards after catch only happens with a good quarterback. A lot of yards after catch happens after with a great quarterback. And that's what you're seeing. That's what you're seeing.
What's amazing is the records that Tua is breaking. And so, you know, a lot of the names that come up are you know, McCarron and John Parker. And McCarron was a 3-year starter, and there might have been a little fudge because he was splitting some time with Phillip Sims, but AJ was the primary. And then, you know, John Parker played he started 4 seasons. And some of the records that Tua is breaking or threatening to break, Tua's only been a starter for 1.5 years. And that's just amazing to think that, you know, he's years behind experience some of these guys, and he's breaking their records, that he is that prolific. It's just amazing.
No, I agree, man. Absolutely mind-boggling. Well, give me your mini game ball. So I don't think you're going to steal mine, so I'm going to let you go first.
Well, I've got two, and I'm hoping that if I take one, you're going to take the other. It sounds like
I have two, but you're not going to take either one.
Okay. Well, I'm giving my mini game ball to Najee, and I'm giving it to him on a 3rd and long. And in fact, it was Henry Ruggs' touchdown. Najee, Texas A&M was blitzing, and Najee picked up the blitz, which allowed Tua just that extra second to get the ball away. And again, we talk about giving Najee a hard time, and he has openly talked about doing the little things to improve his game. And some of the things that he specifically has called out was blocking. And so the fact that, that he picked up that blitz, allowed the quarterback just the extra second, if he had whiffed or he had missed, then Tua probably either gets sacked or, you know, has to run out of the pocket and probably throws the ball away. But Najee picking up that blitz afforded the opportunity to score the touchdown. And that's one of those plays that sort of gets lost. And so typically
not only did he feel the block, he knocked the guy's mouthpiece out of his mouth. Okay. He knocked the crap out of that guy. Okay. He didn't just get it. But I thought about this during the game because he didn't just go and just kind of half-ass block him. He came in with his, I've been in the weight room for a long time, for many hours. I'd come in here and lay the wood, and he laid the wood for sure. All right, so I'm going to give you one of mine. So one of mine, in the spirit of your mini game ball, as you always like to preach to me, I'm giving it to John Mechie. Yes. Now,
all right.
On the first touchdown to Jalen Waddle, when I went back and replayed it 3 times, and I saw the good block that Devonta Smith gave, what stood out at me in the background was John Mechie. And John Mechie was in on that play, and he was driving his guy about 10 yards to the sideline. And so just kudos to this kid. He hasn't been on the field a lot, true freshman. He's obviously playing past the 4-game mark, and he's sitting here showing the coaches, or either he's learned from Jalen and Jerry and Henry and Devonta, because let's face it, he knows, 1, 2, or 3 of these slots on the depth chart are going to be open next year. And here he was with the key block that sprung Jalen Waddle on his touchdown.
Yep. That was the other thing that you had mentioned that is in one of those bonus shows, is who's coming back and who's not, based on talking to someone inside the program. And so I've alluded on these open shows about having talked to someone in the program. And so I did a bonus show where I unpacked that a little bit more. So,
again, all good, man. Who's your other mini game ball?
I was going to go Devonta. And that sounds so – it sounds so cheap after you
went deeper on the same play. No, this is not the spirit of mini game ball at all, dude. He's a headliner.
Well, so is Najee, but those are plays that sort of, you know, are a little bit below the radar. Yeah, you struck out both times there.
My second mini game ball is going to – there's a couple – No, dude. Mine. He's a headliner because he's a starter. But my next mini game ball is going to Miller Forstall. And the reason it goes to him is because right now he is our key H-back guy in our base formation. Our base formation is three wides and Miller Forstall, and Miller Forstall is lining up at right tight end. Left tight end, left H-back, right H-back, motion all over the place. And so Major Tennyson's not getting a lot of run because Miller Forstall is in there all the time. And he got banged up early in this game. And he kind of hobbled off the field, and I was like, oh, crap, he's about to be out of the game. Well, next series, he was back on the field. And so just kudos to this guy. He's obviously had to withstand, you know, an injury past. And right now he's getting his opportunities. He didn't fill up the stat sheet in the pass catching. But I got news for you. He is a key ingredient to this offense right now, and they can't afford to lose him. No, mini game ball for looking like you were going to come out of the game for at least a few series and being back just a few minutes later and sucking it up and just getting back out there and just playing through the situation.
No, that's fair. That's fair. No, he is a critical player at that position. We definitely, you know, one of the weaknesses we talked about in, you know, sort of preseason is, you know, was at the tight end, because we lost so much at the tight end position. And you're right, Major Tennyson isn't stepping up in maybe the way that we would want or need, but Forstall certainly is doing well there. So, yeah, hats off to Miller and sort of the unspoken nature of his role.
Absolutely.
Well, I agree.
Well, defense, I'm just going to talk briefly about how, you know, I like the base formation that we are employing on – well, I'll say this. I was surprised first at how early we saw some backups in the game on the front defensive line.
Yes.
So I guess let's just start there, because obviously we've got some guys, you know, LeBrian Ray was not there on the front line. But we were going pretty deep in the depth chart early in the game. So just talk to me about that and kind of what is your thoughts on that? Because specifically, the sighting that jumped off the page to me was Christian Barmore. And so Christian Barmore, redshirt freshman out of Philly, 6'5", 310. You know, this guy, you know, for Bama fans, this guy has been getting mop-up duty at the beginning of the season with 5 minutes left in the game. And he has come out there and he has seized his opportunity to walk through the door and has just had a nonstop motor and just giving it all you got and just making some highlight reel plays at the end of that game. And when Coach Saban wants to shut the door, he wants to shut the freaking door. And Christian Barmore on the defensive side of the ball, when teams are behind and they've got to pass, et cetera, he's done a nice job. Well, Christian Barmore was in the game in the first quarter on third and long. And so, you know, what's your thoughts on that? I mean, they obviously had three down linemen in that situation, but in some situations, you know, not only was it Fildarian Mathis, but, you know, a Christian Barmore type of player as well.
Yeah, I think when an opportunity presents itself, you know, you have to be prepared to, you know, to seize it. And I think Barmore is certainly one of those players. You know, Saban has talked about him, you know, certainly being a talent, but being someone who needs to understand and execute his responsibilities. If the play goes to the left, he needs to, you know, then if his responsibility is to the left, then he needs to go to the left rather than freelance to the right. And so I think that's been a little bit that's kept him out of the play. But we've also talked about, and Saban's also talked about, we don't have the number of players. We don't have the depth to sustain, you know, 80 possessions every game. Also. And we don't have the bodies to do it. And one thing that we've talked about in the past that we wish the team or the coaches would do, and they didn't do it as much as we would like, is manufacture that depth. Or sort of build up that depth. You've got players that are competent and capable. Let's give them a few more reps and a few more opportunities. They don't have to start. They don't have to be the starters. They don't have to run with the ones the whole time. But let's sneak in an extra, you know, 8 to 12 snaps over the course of a game. And if the player acquits himself well, then all of a sudden you've created depth, right? And so I think Barmore is that type of player. I really do. He is, when he has been given an opportunity, he has played very well. And, you know, we've kind of conjectured on the podcast that he will continue to get more opportunities by virtue of his play. And so when I saw him, I kind of laughed to myself. I was like, well, that's Barmore out there early, certainly earlier than we've seen before. And that's what we want to see. It's almost something that we predicted, and it certainly bodes well for the defense moving forward. So I'm very pleased to see that. Brian Young is another youngster across the defensive front who had been running with the ones in practice over the bye week, but that's been partly due to injury. You know, again, you seize the opportunity as it's given. And so hopefully he'll rotate in more. And if you add in two more competent guys that are, you know, again, getting 8 to 12 snaps a game, hopefully that can grow from there, then you're manufacturing depth across the defensive front. And that's what we need. So I am pleased. For those two guys.
Well, you know, one of our better teams in the Saban era was, you know, the year that we were running 8 to 12 guys on the front defensive line.
Yes, with very little drop-off, yeah.
Right, and that's something that we have not been able to have, you know, in years past, in the past couple of years. I mean, you know, we had guys like Isaiah Buggs last year who was playing on one leg, and against Clemson, you know, he gave us what he had, but there was no next man up to come behind him. You know, kind of deal. So, talk about the fact we talked about a few weeks ago, because we also have limited depth at the linebacker position, that we were going to, you know, that we were taking our base nickel, and it looked to me like we were turning it into a base dime, and specifically Xavier McKinney was in the box as the, you know, pseudo linebacker, you know, physical safety, even though he's a free safety, and our base nickel was turning into a base dime. Well, in this game, it's the second game I've seen this. We're taking the base dime. We are putting three guys' hands in the dirt, rotating in guys like we just talked about, like, you know, Young, etc. But we're taking Anthony Jennings off the end as an edge rusher half the time in thirds and longs, and we're putting him back in the box next to a Shane Lee. And so we talked about Christian Harris is not, you know, maybe he doesn't have the playbook down yet, and he got banged up in this game and thankfully came back. But, you know, Shane Lee is in there in that third and long right now, and, you know, playing all three downs. Well, this is the second game I've seen Anthony Jennings lined up next to Shane Lee at the snap, three guys' hands in the dirt, six guys in the secondary, And Anthony Jennings looks like that guy in arena football where he's just standing up and he's just kind of bouncing around and he's deciding at the snap which hole he wants to go hit. And this is the second time we've done that. And I understand you're getting your good player. You're moving him around so it's harder to block him. But why do you think we're doing that, that we've only done this a couple games now?
Yeah, I think it's all of the above. I think it's putting him in a position where, you know, he can sort of find the weakness. He can track towards the run maybe a little bit better. He's not isolated on one side. It does rotate in, you know, another or different linebacker. There's probably a number of reasons, but you know, we're getting production out of it. And so I don't know that we need another reason than that. And this is a game, certainly, you know, you're talking about all the tools and all the parts and pieces, and we just need them to come up, you know, in the right sequence. You know, talking about Anthony, you know, getting after the quarterback, the Alabama defense, you know, had five, you know, sacks on the day, seven tackles for a loss. You know, that's a weapon in the arsenal that we've not really seen, that type of pass rush. And so if we're manufacturing it by moving around Anthony, and certainly Terrell practiced, you know, all week leading up to the game. And so maybe he's getting some health back. And if we get those guys clicking on all cylinders this second half of the season, this defense really does stand to improve.
Well, I just think it's manufacturing what you have. So most teams in America that didn't have the depth at defensive line and didn't have the depth at linebacker would be suffering right now. But yet we're able to play a good Texas A&M team and double them up, right? Because while we're not deep at linebacker and defensive line right now, we're deep in the secondary. So we're running six DBs out there, one linebacker. You see what I'm saying? And we're able to make it work. So we've only got, I mean, technically Anthony Jennings and Terrell Lewis are technically linebackers. So we're sitting here in third and six or greater, and we're able to get off the field with two defensive linemen, three linebackers, and five and six DBs. So it's just interesting how because of the amount of athletes that he has, he can still move pieces around. Because like we haven't even talked about like Chris Allen, you know, take nothing away from Mathis and the other guys that, you know, have played. Chris Allen, to his credit, guess what? He talks about 22 starters on defense. Well, Chris Allen's not running at a linebacker position, but you talk about manufacturing depth. He's throwing him as one of those three guys with his hands in the dirt on third and long too. And guess what? He doesn't have to know the whole playbook. He just has to know to go after the quarterback. And I think for the 8 or 10 snaps he was in there, he did a pretty good job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we've seen the Tim Williams model work, right? Where now Tim Williams, I don't know that we've had a pass rusher as dynamic as he was, you know, at a singular skill. But we've seen that model work, right? Where it is going to be 12 to 15 snaps a game, very much a specialist. And we've seen that work. And you know, if Christopher Allen is benefiting by some of that, like you said, you don't have to know the whole playbook when, you know, you're in there just to sick 'em.
No, absolutely. We'll talk about Christian Harris for a minute because, you know, we talked about how he has progressed and he got banged up on that opening drive. And unfortunately, the next thing you know, you see Markell Benton out there. No offense to Benton, but you see him in the game when they got, you know, inside the 10-yard line because Christian Harris wasn't out there. Thankfully, he got back out there kind of deal. But kind of like I was talking about with Forrestall, you know, that's another guy that we can't afford to lose.
Well, it really is. And it's almost just the attrition at the position. Christopher, talking about Harris, Harris is just an incredibly talented linebacker. I don't think he's really caught up to SEC play yet. He's going to get there, and you know, missing reps against A&M is just missing how fast he's, you know, getting the experience. And so not only just his production against A&M, but just, you know, that's probably, you know, 20, 30 additional reps that I'd like to see him have, because we may not have needed him this week, but we're going to need to, we're going to need him to be that sophomore, you know, later in the season. And he's getting there and he's going to be a star. We just need him to, you know, move along a little faster in that direction.
No, absolutely. Well, what else would you like to talk about the defense? Because obviously they had that first drive. Then Texas A&M got that field goal thanks to, in large part, to that, you know, big 31-yard pass play kind of deal. The defense did a lot of good things. I mean, they shut down, you know, they shut down their best receiver, you know, had one catch for 5 yards on the day, you know, by far their most physical wide receiver, Kendrick Rogers. Is the jury out on the defense? Because I'm sounding a little spoiled when I say that while I'm glad we won, I wish they wouldn't have got those last couple scores to, you know, to get 28 points on the board. I mean, am I just too freaking spoiled at this point?
Well, yes. Because I feel that way too. But there's also a heck of a lot that the defense did well. You know, the 5 sacks, again, we're seeing pressure on the quarterback that we've not seen before. 10 pass breakups is just amazing. That's just that is truly, I mean, half that number is a significant number. And so to see 10 is just incredible. I think the defense is going to come along. You know, Maiden had, and not to pick on a guy, but I mean, he just had an incredible bust on the touchdown to, you know, the tight end. And so those are the types of things that are frustrating to see. The penalties, oh, my goodness, how many times did Texas A&M sustain a drive because of a penalty? You know, twice on the opening touchdown, you know, there was a field goal drive that was kept alive with penalties. And so 11 penalties on the day. Now, some of those were against the offense, but you take away, you know, half of the ones, you take away half the penalties that were registered against the defense, and you impact Texas A&M's score. And so if we play with a little more discipline in terms of, you know, committing penalties, I think this defense almost organically improves. And then you clean up just a little bit of the sloppy play, missed assignment there by Maiden. That's a touchdown that that shouldn't have scored. But when we think about defense, I want to put a twist on that. Kellen Mond is a bad mother joker. Tommy, he carried the ball 16 times and you know, got hit on nearly every one of those. Chris Walsh on his website, he counted up unofficially in the pocket. You know, Mond was racked up 13 times in the pocket. And there were plays where it looked like he didn't know his name when he got up, or that he could barely walk when he got up. And there are quarterbacks that we will play that if we give them that treatment, they will say no mas. And I give, and so that's the defense really putting it to a guy. And it's just a tough dude. And if they do that to some of these other quarterbacks on the schedule, I think those guys will go no moss. And so that's a credit to Kellen, but I'm also tip of the cap to the defense because they went after him and they laid some wood to him.
No, they did. And unfortunately, on two of those last three drives, he had one run for 20 and he had one scramble for 36. And so that was 56 of his 90 yards there. You take those two runs away and now he's averaging 3 yards a carry. So, but those two blown assignments, you know, is a learning experience for this defense. And like you said, you know, they only scored 2 touchdowns in the second half. And one of those touchdowns came on that huge bust, which was very frustrating. And unfortunately that true freshman tight end, you know, Jalen Wartemeyer, or however you pronounce that, he provided a big mismatch. I actually am surprised I didn't go to him earlier in the game. I mean, the guy runs 6'5", 260. He's a big guy and has got some good hands. And I'm glad they didn't go to him earlier in the game because I think he would have created some more problems. So to your point, like with Kelly Mond, you're not going to see a lot of guys 6'5", 260 with hands like him with his mobility. And, you know, that you're going to be playing against.
No, that's fair. That's fair. Anything else on defense or mini game ball?
Nope. I'm going to let you go first.
All right. My mini game ball is Jordan Battle. And he's the true freshman safety, plays in the dime package. I think he was erroneously flagged for pass interference on a play. I think he and the receiver were close to one another, but the ball was over their head. But the play that really stood out to me, and I want to say this was in the third quarter. This was a game that it felt like the third quarter lasted forever. And so everything it feels like was in the third quarter. But there was a play where Mon was throwing the ball up. I want to say Trayvon was the corner. But the receiver had beat the primary defender. You know, had a good step on him. And Mon laid the ball up, and it was just right out in front of the receiver. If he caught it, if he'd reached out and grabbed the ball, it would have been a touchdown. It was in the end zone. And from the safety position, sort of streaking across, is Jordan Battle. And you can see they show enough of the replays. And why the announcers didn't sort of pick up on this or speak to this, I don't know. But you can see the receiver. There's an angle that they show. You can see the receiver, and you can see his head turn. And he's turning away from the ball, and he sees Jordan Battle coming. And just in that instant, you see his arms come back in, and he just makes a business decision that I'm not going for that. I'm not going to try to reel in that pass and get, you know, clobbered by this safety coming across here. And so I thought that was – and so for is a subtle play. It kept points off the board. You know, people, it's one of those plays that no one will know about. But just seeing that on replay a couple times, I'd advise you go back and look at that, because that's worth the price of admission. And certainly that was a good play by Jordan. And honestly think if he had not been doing his assignment, it would have been a touchdown. But had he not sort of been aggressively getting after trying to make a play, it would have been a touchdown as well. So hats off for Jordan Battle on that play.
No, absolutely. Well, mine's going to go to Christian Barmore in the true spirit of the mini game ball, as you like to say, for the reasons we talked about earlier. I'm just happy for the kid. I think he got a – to your point, I guess I'll pick on the refs as well, because it does sound fun. And so, they treat these quarterbacks like they're prima donnas. And so Christian Barmore, I'm glad that when he got called – for, you know, a blow to the head of Kelly Mond when he had just put his hand up to try to, you know, deflect the pass, and his hand barely touched the helmet and he pulled it right off. I wish they could use common sense and be like, really? Like, obviously that was inadvertent. And so he got flagged for that, and he came out of the game, and he got to come back a few minutes later, because I'm glad the coaches just realized, come on, like, but that was a crappy call against Barmore. So I'm glad he fought through that and had a good day.
I thought it did look more like a karate chop.
He had his hand up, man, and his just hand came down. I mean, it was angled like a karate chop, but he really barely touched the guy. I mean, come on. This is football. This isn't tiddlywinks. I mean, really? I mean, the ref needs to look at that and say, okay, you know, Kelly Mond, 6'3", 220. He didn't knock him down. He barely touched his helmet. Okay. Everybody's good. Let's just blow the whistle and keep playing freaking football. It's a man's game here. Come on.
So I don't know. I don't know who had week six on the tiddlywink reference, but cash in that chip.
All right, man. Let's talk special teams, man. There's a lot to talk about. Is it time to have another audition on the freaking quad? I mean, I know we got some injuries here to the true freshman here, but it looks to me like Bullivus needs to look over his shoulders to the quad for free tryouts.
Is it Bullivus or Skyler?
I think they both need to look over their freaking shoulders.
Okay.
I mean, well, I think really?
Skyler especially.
We're,
I mean, he,
we're still, you know, we're still clanking the upright on an extra point. Are you kidding me?
But it went in, so I mean, that's we'll Dude, take that.
You're the number one team in the nation. You don't need a kicker who's clanking the ball on the upright. Just go for two, for Pete's sakes.
So here's my thing on Bolivis. This for me, the story on Bolivis is no longer Bolivis. The story on Bolivis is his father or grandfather or uncle or someone must work for a stats company. Twice, ESPN had reported that he was, you know, 2 of 2 or 3 of 3 on his field goals, clearly missing, ignoring the fact that he had missed. There was that he had gone for 2 for 3. He had gone 2 of 3 one week, and ESPN reported that he was 2 of 2. And then another week, I think he went 3 of 4, and they reported that he went 3 of 3. This week, they reported that he was 5 of 5 on his PATs, and there was a block. And so maybe they just don't credit the block against the wide receivers. But the AL.com, they were even more confused, and they said that he went 5 of 5 on his 6 kicks. And so I thought that was – and again, it's a block, so I don't know how you credit it, but I just thought, man, that's the third time this season that it's been sort of clunky numbering on his kicks. And so for me, that's the bigger story than his actual kicks, because, I mean, what do you want?
No, that's fair, but poor Skyler, man. 29.5 average? Really?
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's bad, right? Like, I would almost rather don't play me, you know, because and I mean, you want to have competitive spirit, and so I'm being a little tongue in cheek, but my God, those are bad. Like if you're in the mid 30s, that's bad. And when your average is below 30, that's really bad. And what I don't understand, and maybe there's a coach that, you know, that we can have on and talk to, but, you know, truly more of the mechanic of the kick, because everyone talks about, you know, I mean, obviously, I mean, he was given a scholarship. He was one of the best kickers in the country. And so he has some pedigree. And, you know, coach talks about, you know, he nails them in practice. He's inconsistent. And there's a couple articles about there's other guys on the team that have, you know, really strong legs too, but they're inconsistent as well. And I start to wonder, can they be more inconsistent than Skyler? And then I even start to wonder, I'm not sure Skyler's inconsistent. I think he's consistently kicking short. And so, well, the I don't first, even buy the inconsistent.
Well, the anymore. First one, well, the first one, you know, it was 4th and 10 at the Texas A&M 48. And so obviously you and I both know that, you know, you line up behind that yard of behind that line of scrimmage, right? So, you know, he was what, 10 yards behind there. So he had room on that one. That one, he put it to the 12. It just got returned 10 yards. But the second one is it was 4th and 9 at the Texas A&M 41. He punted it 23 yards. It went out of bounds at the Texas A&M 18. I mean, that's just bad. That's the one I guess I'm highlighting. I think if I would have punted the ball, I could have, like, if that's what my job was, right? I mean, you can't punt 23 yards when you're lining up behind the line of scrimmage at about the 50 to punt the ball. You can't punt the ball 23 yards. Not in college football. Not for the number one team in the country.
No, I agree. And you know, try out on the quads. That's we've talked about that for years. And so something's got to give, and maybe it's Will Reichert coming back. And I think somebody I read on AL.com, they were impressed with Bolivar's numbers on the PATs and the field goals. And they sort of questioned is would Reichert win his job back?
Oh my gosh.
He's kidding. He's not going to win that. He's going to win all three jobs. What? He's going to
that's why he got hurt to start with. That's why he's hurt to start with, probably, because he was doing too much.
So,
oh my gosh. Well,
yeah, I don't think he, yeah.
Well, let's flip the field, because, of course, you know, Alabama's playing against the Ray Golf Award winner from last year, right? dude just comes in and like nails four punts for a 49.8 average.
Can I stop you? You said you were going to – wait a second. You said you wanted to work Georgia into the podcast. I didn't think it would be a Ray Golf reference.
No, I should have said this earlier for you know, go Dogs, right? I mean, really? Come on, you choked in South Carolina. Like, I should have done this like 30 minutes ago. So I'm sorry. But so this poor guy. No, it's all good. It's all good. So this poor guy kicks a long of 57, and like he kicks it to the right sideline. He pins in Jalen Waddle. Like, instead, like, he balls up and says, I'm going to kick at you, but I'm just going to kick it 60 yards, and I'm going to pin you over on the sideline where there's no way you can do anything. And Jalen Waddle has four returns for 128 yards. So when you look at this stat line, because you don't get to play this game very often, you got the top punter in college football, four punts for 200 yards, and you've got the returner, four returns for 128 yards. I mean, look at that, Dave. That's the epitome of flip the field right there, man.
No, it absolutely is. You know, it's those hidden yards, and Saban has certainly talked about those. But that's an incredible sort of field position maneuvering. Saban, you know, definitely talked about, hey, a good punter can be good for us if they'll kick to us, because it'll give us sort of room to operate. And so, so their guy, the Ray Guy award winner, not the Ray Golf award winner. That is awesome.
Dude, I was doing that on purpose, man. Just go with it.
I am with that because that is awesome. But look, something else that stands out to me, and not just for Waddle, but for Ruggs and the kickoff returns. You know, Jeff Banks is our special teams coach, formerly their special teams coach. And so I'm convinced that he had a little extra sort of want to in against these guys. And he knew how to attack, where to attack, and the opportunities that would be there. And so the fact that and I caught myself sort of yelling at the TV and then yelling at the TV when Ruggs would run these kickoffs back, and especially once when it looked like he had fumbled it, but he had not. And he ended up with, you know, four kicks for four returns for, you know, $131. But look, there's kickoff math. That's not fair because not all of his kicks were filled in the end zone, but at least one or two were. And so, you know, four kicks returned to the end zone is going to get you 100 yards. And so he had 131 yards that he actually had to run for. But not all of his kicks were in the end zone. So I guess I can't go too hard on that.
Well, to your point, there was
almost busted a couple.
No, he did almost bust a couple. But, dude, is it fair to say that the listeners just saw the last big game for Jalen Waddle at punt returner this season? I'm calling it. That was it.
Well, it may be.
You know why? You know why I'm saying that?
No one
will kick to him again this season. I don't think. I think it's going to be that stupid little run over to the side and do that rugby crap that Clemson does, or it's going to be just to kick the ball out of bounds. Like, I truly think we saw it, because I think teams will watch that in film and say, okay, the top punter in college football just dared him four times, and here's what they did. And I think they're going to say, uncle, we're not doing it anymore.
Well, if you're playing us, right?
If you're going to take Jalen Waddle out of the game, we're not going to let you flip the field on us.
No. I mean, this team, you know, you're going to say things along the lines of, their offense is too good to give them a short field. Why risk giving them, you know, they're too good to take that risk. We can take that risk off the table. So let's just take it off the table.
I think
we got enough to contend with that we can't off the table.
I would tell you that I think because of this game, you're going to have more teams go for it on some fourth down opportunities and some situations a little bit outside of their comfort zone on the other side of the field, and just say, what the hell, let's take our chances. Because we already can't outscore them. So just a thought.
Yeah.
Well, let me talk about Cahoe. Well, let me talk about Cahoe real quick, man, because before he blocked his punt, he had just barely missed the one before. So yes. Going back to the special teams coach, and, you know, he knows about this program. He coached at this program. Obviously, he had a hand in this. But I'm happy for the KO kid because he almost got one, and then he got the very next one. So I just thought that was cool.
No, I thought it was great. And then on the one that he got, you know, obviously he, you know, part of the get was, you know, he contacted the punter and he immediately like stopped and put his hands up. Like, I didn't hit him. And then before he realized, hey, I actually blocked the kick. It's okay. So I thought that was funny. And then certainly, you know, that's two games in a row that he has had a block, a blocked punt, and both times resulting in a touchdown last time. And it's Cahoe and Shavers, right? And so last
– Yeah, Shavers enjoyed that one.
Yes. So last time, Shavers wasn't able to get the ball. And there were a couple articles and interviews with players saying that, you know, they gave him a hard time about that. And then this time, he seemed so intentional and so, you know, it's an oblong ball, so it's going to bounce kind of crazy. But he almost had a little extra, like, gingerness to go into reach for the ball. And I rewound that a couple times.
No, and did you – Did you see Saban's reaction on the sideline when there was all the celebration and Tua was right in the middle of it? Tua even got knocked down. And I was like, oh, great. He's going to like – something's going to happen here. But Tua's down there right in the thick of the celebration of like 15 to 20 players. And you can read Saban's lips. He was totally pissed right. off that they were down there celebrating. He was not happy at all.
I would have it no other way.
And then he took every opportunity after the game to talk about the fact that they didn't finish, because to what we're talking about earlier, they did not finish. This team did not finish the game. Take nothing away from Texas A&M, but when a team starting tailback has 10 carries for 27 yards, they don't need to score 28 points.
Right.
All right, anything else you got?
I agree.
Go ahead.
Well, it's just lapses, right? You take away the maiden play and some of the penalties, and it is a different score. And, again, that's not to discredit Texas A&M because they did what they did, but there's certainly things that Alabama can
show. No, absolutely. Well, what else you got before we look ahead?
Let's look ahead.
All right, so this is a big game in years past, but this game – You know, obviously Tennessee comes into this game. You know, they got a much needed win against the Mississippi State Bulldogs on Saturday to bring their record to 2-4. This is not the Alabama Tennessee series of years past. And this is just not that game. Thank goodness it hasn't been that game now for a few years. Tennessee is obviously off to a tough start. You know, losing at home to Georgia State to open the season. What do you think we get here from the Tennessee Volunteers?
Well, I think they're going to be up for the game, and you know they're going to be as excited as they have been, you know, for the win. I think in a relative context, it is Mississippi State, but I mean, hell, when you lose to Roast Beef Tech. A win over Mississippi State is actually pretty good. So I think that they're going to be on their version of cloud nine because this has probably been a pretty crappy ride. Now, there's going to be a wake-up call when they come to Tuscaloosa, and I think sort of in their heart of hearts, they know that. I think it's going to, you know, well, I don't think. I know it's going to be a night game, and so sort of the natives will be restless and – you know, we're going to have an opportunity to show off the new LED lights and that's going to, you know,
wow.
Sort of up and up.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm not sure. I'm just saying.
A little sarcasm there on the whole light thing, but go ahead.
The point is it's going to be a night game. It's going to be a rowdy crowd. And I think Tennessee is going to find themselves in a hostile environment, severely overmatched. And so I'm looking at an LED enabled 49-7 score.
49-7. Yep. So Georgia,
and it's like Fletch, If you remember Fletch, he was 6'5", 6'9", with the afro. This is 42-7, but 49-7 with the LED lights.
Okay. Well, Georgia came to their house and put it on them 43-14. And obviously they still have questions, you know, at quarterback. I'm not sure. Who do you think we'll see? Do you think we're going to see, you know, Jarrett?
We'll see those two and a third guy.
Okay. I'm just wondering because I think Jarrett's not the answer for them. I think if he ends up playing and they're not able to run the true freshman more, I think it's going to be, you know, a long game for them if they're not able to throw the football. And so I think we hang 50 on them because it's Tennessee. And I think Saban's okay for us hanging 50 on Tennessee, yep. even though, you know, there's loyalties to the, you know, to the former coaching tree alliance, if you would. So I hate it for him, but I don't hate it for Tennessee, and I don't hate it for their god awful orange color. And so I'm going to say this is going to be a 56-3 ball game.
See, 56-3. No, that's great. Here's
I don't like that for Jeremy Pruitt, because I love Jeremy Pruitt. But it besides Jeremy Pruitt, I hope they just stick it to him.
Here's Saban's thinking. My interpretation of Saban's thinking on running up the score against Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt. Saban, as he rests, as he lays his head in bed, you know, this week, is thinking sort of the dancing visions he has in his head. How many points would I have to score for Tennessee to fire Jeremy Pruitt Monday morning, so that by Wednesday afternoon he's at practice down here in Tuscaloosa
wearing his Alabama gear? I like that. I like that.
If
man.
He could, if we could run a 100-point play, if he could score, and it's that counterintuitive because he doesn't want to run it up, but he's like, if I can get him fired from that Tennessee job and really just save him from just that,
save him from that circumstance crap.
Yes. Yes. Then I can have him as an analyst on my team, which, by the way, he would then be one of two analysts on my team that's being paid for by Tennessee.
How cool would that be?
Right? I mean, come on. That'd be pretty cool.
That would be pretty cool. Tennessee's paying for two of our coaches. Yeah, that would be pretty nice.
Yes. Yes.
So I hate it for Jeremy.
So that's what I got to say.
I hate it for Jeremy, but – you know, we're gonna have some riled up Tennessee fans because it's a 9 o'clock kickoff, and there's gonna be some disturbances. There's gonna be the local police, I think, is gonna be called. The UAPD, I think, is gonna have a few situations on their hands on Saturday night.
Yeah, probably so.
All right, what else?
I can't wait.
What else you got for the listeners, man?
You know, I think I think. You know, we absolutely love engaging with the listeners. Hit us up on the iTunes. We definitely are looking for some new reviews on iTunes. We'd appreciate some support there. Hit us up on Facebook. You know, follow us there. Hit us up with questions there. We love the listener questions on the email at our Alabama Football Podcast at gmail.com. Hit us up there. And I'll just throw in, you know, probably my last time this season, but the listener support campaign, we're going to keep that open. But we're starting to put content there. I think there's 4 or 5 recordings there. We've probably got a couple more sort of in the hopper to put out there. And so now is your chance to contribute, participate, and get the benefit by that. And so, those are some things I'd put out there, but we greatly appreciate everyone listening, everyone's support. It continues to be, you know, the engagement is flattering. The comments that people put out there just incredible, and we really really enjoy engaging and participating with folks.
Absolutely, guys. We appreciate y'all listening, and we are looking forward to kicking some tail for some Tennessee Volunteers.
Absolutely. Well, run us out, Tommy.
All right, man, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.